The recent explosions near the airport in Kabul, where tens of thousands are being evacuated, may signify the end of an era. This is Don Rush. But Salisbury University Professor Emeritus Michael Laughlin suggests it's not the end of American intervention abroad.
The end of the American military's presence in Afghanistan comes as some vindication for the peace movement against neoconservatives who wish to use military intervention as the first tool of foreign policy rather than the last. Recent polls affirm this, with one poll indicating that roughly 64% of the American public views the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq as not worth fighting. This present public animus against military intervention also bodes well against new military adventures, at least in the near term. While public opinion falls far short of directing foreign policy, it does pose limits on the range of action presidents may wish to take, risking political costs they wish to avoid. Biden is unlikely to launch a military intervention to overthrow, say, Mr. Maduro in Venezuela, or the reigning communist leaders in Cuba, even if he wished to, because the loss of voter support would be too costly. Yet we should avoid the conclusion that Biden has revealed himself as a peace president, removing military force from his box of foreign policy tools. Biden spoke clearly in a recent speech distinguishing between counterinsurgency warfare and counterterrorism. In short, counterinsurgency strategy requires boots on the ground and nation building. Counterterrorism requires only the capacity to hit and run. Biden made clear that he is putting aside the boots-on-the-ground model, but also embracing the counterterrorism strategy to pursue national interests abroad. In effect, he promises the use of violence, of military force, as a need arises, need defined in terms of Biden's definition of national interest. This force will likely take the form of drone strikes, targeted missile strikes, and the use of special operations forces to strike and then withdraw. If this is the vision, then a kind of perpetual war footing is in our future. Indeed, we should emphasize that this is a continuation of the use of the military operationally on a global scale that began to take shape in the second Bush administration, but gained acceleration in the Obama and Trump years and expanded to include strikes in Pakistan, Somalia, and Yemen, beyond Afghanistan and Iraq. Over the past two decades, for example, drone strikes increased from an estimated 57 in the Bush administration to roughly 563 in the Obama administration. While precise estimates for the Trump years are elusive, informed estimates suggest another significant escalation in the use of drone strikes as the war raged on over the next 4 years prior to the Biden presidency. In short, as troops were removed from the ground, more bombs dropped from the sky. We should recognize as well that airstrikes endanger civilians, whatever rules of engagement are established. For example, during the Obama-Biden years, an average of 582 civilians were killed each year. This terrible consequence of bombing increased to 1,134 under Trump, a 95% jump in civilian fatalities due to airstrikes. Collateral damage, the dehumanized term describing this loss, is always present. To be sure, given the Afghanistan withdrawal, we are likely to see some cessation of strikes within Afghanistan in the near term. However, once the evacuation program ends and public attention drifts away, counter-terror operations will pick up again if past is prologue. Biden's reluctance to pressure Israel to stop its bombing campaign in Gaza earlier in the summer, perhaps, gives us a hint of Biden's view on the use of force. If we are to curb this form of warfare, continued citizen and journalistic vigilance and criticism will be necessary. This is Mike O'Loughlin.